You guys saw GameStop released earnings today?
I did not. I've kind of given up on watching GameStop. Sorry. I have to admit it. It's a sideshow. It's a waste of time. What happened with GameStop?
GameStop generated earnings of $1.34 a share.
What happened to the stock?
I believe the stock's off pretty significantly because they have said, GameStop has said they're going to start selling their stock to raise money for their transition to the e-commerce part of their business. So away from brick and mortar to e-commerce.
Profit. What do y'all sell? Oh, we sell our own stock.
We sell our own stock that's propped up by a bunch of...
Yeah. Yeah. It was down $12.74 during the day, and in the after hours market, it's down another $7.85. So down 6.5%.
What's the current price?
Hour and a half. In the after hours, it's 174.01 right this second.
174? Wow. Yeah, that's well off. So, I guess
when I say
sense.
Right this second, that may be a delayed quote, but anyway, yeah.
Well, this is also a delayed podcast.
Okay.
People won't listen to this for 6 days.
Okay.
It could be all kinds of different prices.
That's right. So today is Tuesday, but yeah, I'm surprised that they made money, but again, I don't follow it close. I just think it's become an enormous sideshow. It's a sideshow,
all right.
Yeah. Oh, it's a show. Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Come over here and see the two-headed stock.
Two-headed stock. Like <cheap. laughs>
The Mystery Market Tour is a production of Sphere Wealth Management. Sphere is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Sphere and its representatives are licensed or exempt from licensure. No advice may be rendered by Sphere unless a client service agreement is in place. To see our ADV or get additional information about Sphere, visit our website, www.spherewealth.com. Firm information is also available on the SEC website, www.advisorinfo.sec.gov. Before investing, seek advice from a financial professional, preferably one that acts as a fiduciary and is willing to put that in writing. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter. You can also sign up for our email commentary through our website, spherewealth.com.
This is Mystery Market Tour, a podcast by Sphere Wealth Management. We hope you enjoy the show. Did you guys see that CBS interview with Oprah and Prince Harry and Meghan Markle?
I did not.
I didn't see it, but I've heard about
it. The GameStop of the...
The Royals are the GameStop. GameStop had earnings, by the way.
That's right. They're a sideshow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, what happened?
Well, I didn't see it, right? Full disclosure, I didn't see it, but what I've read and heard about it was that...
Like, I think this is the most important thing going on in America, just behind The Bachelorette or whatever.
Yeah, none of us saw it.
Reality TV show.
It was an interview, and Meghan Markle and Prince, they basically kind of whined and cried about how they're mistreated and things aren't all that great, and the public just didn't buy it because they were like, what? You guys are...
The one that...
The prince and the princess.
Well, y'all live off the spoils of your citizens, right? How could that not be a good deal?
And the one that I thought was funny was Meghan Markle apparently said she didn't know that she was supposed to curtsy to the queen. That's a thing. Like, you got to be respectful to the queen. And she acted like she knew that was kind of something you might do, like, in public, you know, but that you weren't, that wasn't real.
Oh, you're supposed to do it all the time?
Yeah,
oh,
wait, they do really it supposed
did
to
she
do
not
it.
Every watch time you the, come to dinner?
What was the show, The Royals?
Well, has she not
watched that show?
Yeah, she needs to watch The Crown.
The Crown, that's
it. Like, you come in for family dinner, what, they make mac and cheese, and it's like, oh, thank you.
Curtsy to the queen.
Really?
It's the queen. Come on.
Everybody in that house has bad knees.
You guys need to watch The Crown.
Sharon watched it. Yeah. She said it was good.
I mean, the best one I saw was, it was a meme, and it was the two faces, you know, when Meghan Markle says her thing, you know, and then Oprah's got her face, you know, her like, oh my gosh, face, you know, and it's Meghan Markle and Prince Harry sitting in a pile of money going, you have no idea how hard we have it. And Oprah going, oh, I can relate. It's not a pile of money.
That's right. Oprah's richer than the queen. Yeah. That's for sure. But
what's fascinating,
my life
now
is so horrible. I don't have enough money to do nothing. And people treat me bad. You know, all this money weighs me down. Yeah. My pockets are getting holes in it.
Become British?
But Paul McCartney, I'm a royal. I've got so much money. It's so wow, my life is hard.
I did see a top 10 list. It was top 10 rags to riches stories.
Oh, let's
Oprah was
that.
Number one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oprah was number one. I mean, phenomenal story.
No question. That is
absolutely phenomenal story. I believe her mom had her as a teenager.
Okay. I think so.
And
grew
just,
up dirt poor.
Struggled.
Yeah.
in Mississippi, I believe, right?
I think somewhere in the South. But yeah, God bless her. She's done amazingly well, created an empire.
Yeah, a couple of others in there. Ozzy Osbourne was in there, I saw.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't read all of them.
Did he grow up in Birmingham, Manchester?
I don't know. You know more about Ozzy Osbourne, obviously.
He's from England, I do know that.
Yeah. I saw J.D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie in there. Andrew Carnegie was too.
Okay.
Coolest story about Carnegie was, most people don't realize, he was actually the understudy of one of these railroad barons. And they get to the Mississippi River, and at the time you had to take your goods off of the train, right, and you had to put them on
a barge thing
and go across the Mississippi, and then you put them back on new trains, right? Mm-hmm. And he wanted to create a bridge to span the Mississippi River, and so he started working on it. So Carnegie was kind of tasked with working on it. The first one fell down, and eventually he said, man, I need it to be, like, wood's not going to work. It's too far, so it's got to be steel. But at the time, and people don't realize this, there was steel. We had metals. Think about swords and spoons and forks and knives and things like that. We just didn't have steel in, like, these massive
girders.
He figures out a way to do it, gets this group in Pittsburgh to go along. And then the next thing you know, everyone's sourcing Carnegie steel, which eventually became, what was this steel company called?
Carnegie Steel?
It was Carnegie Steel, but then it was something else.
U.S. Steel, probably.
U.S. Steel eventually bought this company.
Bethlehem Steel, U.S. Steel. I used to call it Big Steel back in the day.
Big Steel.
Big Steel. Big Tobacco. Mall Big Bell. Steel. You know, wanted some of those symbol.
Big Steel sounds like a Big good steel. Reality show.
Big Steel.
Where they get some guys who are doing nefarious, robbing of different places. And it's like,
smack her with the big steel. Yeah, that's a lead pipe upside the head, right? No, I think that was kind of the nickname back in the old days.
The Big Steel?
Yeah, Big Steel. You know, your Ma Bell was AT&T and Big Steel was U.S. Steel.
Like Pirates, the Big Steel.
That would be a good movie title, right? The Big Steel, Big Short, Big Steel.
The Big Short's a great movie.
About a bank getting robbed.
Yeah,
you know, Big Steel. Have you started watching that Pirates show yet?
I have not. I don't. The Pirates of the Caribbean, that's the only one I've seen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this is one that came on. You know how they, like, recommend something for you after you finish watching a show?
Yeah.
Yep.
My kids are old enough now to watch Pirates of the Caribbean, and that's all they ever want to watch.
Well, that's a true story.
That's all they ever want to watch.
That happened, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a true story.
Yeah. Especially the guy with the octopus face.
Yeah. That's actually real. Every time they look at me and they're like, Daddy, that one, he's scary.
He is scary.
He's a little scary, but so it recommends this true story pirates show, kind of documentary.
Yeah.
There's a little acting in it, but it's terrible acting. But anyway, it's a documentary about pirates. Fascinating. Yeah. Absolutely. I did not know Nassau was kind of the initial hub of pirates. They were initially privateers. They were based out of Port Royal, which is the show in the town in Pirates of the Caribbean, Port Royal, Jamaica.
Oh, okay.
Which is the actual town in the Caribbean. And actually the governor who kind of allowed for piracy to begin, this kind of like forced piracy to begin because the Spanish and the English stopped fighting. And so during the time they had these privateers to go rob Spanish merchant ships. And so once the war was over and there was peace between the English and the Spanish, well, these guys were just out of a job. Well, now they're just a bunch of sailors with boats around in the Caribbean with something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the U.S. military, right? We need somebody's butt kicked.
Yeah.
we need to get after it.
So anyway, so they go to Nassau. They don't like Port Royal. It's too many rules there. So they go to Nassau where there's basically no rules. And now Nassau, you know, one of the crowns in the Caribbean. Have you ever been to Nassau, Keith?
I have not.
I don't think you have. You been?
No.
Have you been?
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Is that where Atlantis, the big resort, is?
Yeah.
That looks like a cool place.
Yeah. I think they called it Hog Island in the show. I didn't know it was called Hog Island, but I've
wild hogs, I guess, running around on there.
Have you seen the Pig Island? You seen, like, where the pigs swim in the ocean?
I think I saw something like that on one of those Nat Geo type things somewhere one time. Pigs swimming.
Pigs swimming. I'm just envisioning pigs in the ocean.
Pigs don't look like they'd swim very well.
Not very well.
They don't.
Well,
look, fat floats. And float. So,
I guess they just kind of float.
Might be easy,
and
sure.
And I did Atlantis here a couple of years ago, and
looks like fun.
Man, I tell you, that is an awesome place. If you get a chance to go, you have to take it. I went with some guys, and they had some boats. We had access to these pretty large boats. So I got on with, like, Captain Steve. He was the captain of my boat, and then everybody else had the big boat, the real big boat. And man, the water got really choppy. I mean, it was a little windy that day, but the water got really choppy. It's amazing how many of these little islands exist. You don't, like this little archipelago of the Bahamas, it's just thousands of these little tiny islands. And you can just, I mean, there was a moment where we just drove the boat over, parked on the beach, hung out on some random beach, jumped back on the boat, drove it back out to the big boat, and everybody kept going.
Just but, little uninhabited ones, right?
Yeah.
But looks like that would be fun.
But we tried to get out to this little, you know, swimming pig deal.
Right.
We wanted to go see that. And I was on the small boat, and in comes the perfect storm. It's like 75 and sunny that day. So, I mean, it's like the most perfect weather ever. But I'm calling it the perfect storm because those waves were larger than bathtub waves, and I was freaking out.
Larger than bathtub.
Yeah. It was almost as big as the waves in the wave pool.
Oh, now we're talking.
At the Wet n' Wild, you know, at the water park.
Wild, yeah.
Wet n' Wild just seems like not a very nice place. Wet n' Wild?
Huh?
That just seems like Wet n' Wild just seems...
Yeah.
It seems like the name of a college bar on Dixon. Not the name of a family water park.
Family-friendly water park.
Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, the wave pool at Whitewater, the waves came in. Man, Captain Steve, that guy can navigate a boat.
Yeah.
I mean, it was... I'm being somewhat facetious. The waves were pretty big. They were scary. They were scary enough so we didn't go. We couldn't get across this channel.
You went back.
So we had to turn around and go back. We ended up spending the day snorkeling. And
yeah,
I mean, it was still the Bahamas. Like, we had a great day. But yeah, we couldn't
get the big boat went ahead and went over and saw the pig swimming?
The big boat, they switched to.
Okay.
Yeah. They stayed with us. But, man, it was cool. The Bahamas is a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to go. I've been to the Caribbean one time.
Where'd you go?
Martinique.
Oh.
French. Yeah.
Oh, because you're a little bit French. No, you're English. No way.
I'm getting down that road. Yeah. Now he's going to speak some French here, some Spanish.
No, my daughter speaks fluent French, but no, I'm not French. Can't speak French. I can barely speak English.
I'm British, though. You're good at that.
I can do English.
You're good at that British talking.
If you watch Outlander, you learn how to speak Scottish.
There you go.
Right.
Everything that we know is from TV shows.
Yeah,
there you go. That's where we learn all things.
Yeah. Speaking of TV shows, you guys see Yellin' and Pal today? Get going.
Is that a new Netflix show?
It is.
Yellin' and Pal. It's a cartoon. Hey, Yellin'. Yeah. Hey, Pal.
He's on fire today.
I'm sorry.
He's on fire.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. We just said Yellin' and Pal show. It just sounded like one of those Nickelodeon cartoons, you know?
What'd they say today? What are they talking about today?
Well, they both acknowledge prices in some of these asset classes are really high.
Yeah.
They talked a little bit about real estate today and how high real estate prices are. And they flooded the market with liquidity. There's a lot of cash flying around in the market. It's just not moving around very fast. And they're still talking about that. The one thing that I thought was interesting, and this is the thing that I think.
So prices are high, but we're going to print more money.
But we're going to keep printing money.
That's right. This fire's getting really hot. Hand me a bucket of gasoline. Right? Is that kind of paraphrase what they...
Pretty close, yeah.
Okay.
I think they said it just like that, although they used the English accent.
Okay. Or they're yelling and...
Pal.
Yeah. Hey, yelling!
Hey, pal!
I mean, they are a fantastic duo on television.
Yeah.
They really are because they...
They've got the...
Surely there's SNL's going to get bored and hopefully they'll do some yelling pal stuff.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good. And there's just a special language that they have to speak. To Fed speak,
yeah,
you know, all these roundabout ways of saying something, and you know, obtuse, or is that the right word, use of the word there? But you know,
did you know the Fed's balance sheet has nearly doubled in the last 20 months?
Yeah,
nearly doubled. So we're pushing $7.7 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet. Let's explain that. Federal Reserve established in 1912 with the sole purpose of making the financial system more stable.
Apparently. I mean, they enable the government to spend more money than they have. I mean, that may not be the only reason it was created. It just happens to be privately owned by a cabal of secretive banks. And, you know, you can kind of go down that. Hand me the tinfoil, Don. I need to put my hat on. But anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously they do good things too. But, you know, it took them, 100 years? Well, not quite 100 years, 95 years or so to get to about... I think $800 billion in assets before the financial crisis, and over the course of the next couple of years went from $800 billion in assets to $4.5 trillion in assets. And like John said, it's almost doubled. I think they were actually shrinking their assets a little bit, maybe in what, the fall of 2018, and then the market kind of threw a little temper tantrum.
$4 trillion,
just under four, right? Uh-huh. Okay, and then the market kind of threw a fit in October to December of 2018, and then it was back to the races since then. And of course, COVID happened, and now there's just
it's
raining money.
I think it's important to explain exactly what they're buying. They're buying treasuries, mortgage-backed securities, and corporates. They got it. So they bought corporates recently.
I know they've talked about it, and sometimes all they have to do is say they're willing to do something, and then it fixes it.
Creates stability.
Yeah,
there.
It's kind of like, you know, you threaten your kids with a spanking. You don't have to spank them, right? They're acting up.
Yeah.
Don't make me come over there and spank you. And so sometimes the Fed, I mean, I'm joking about it, but just their jawboning can cause the markets to stabilize and everybody go like, oh. There's a safety net under us. They got our backs.
Yeah.
And so that's what they did last year.
They have our backs, and they've got a printing press.
There you go. They can do it. So
what's better than being underwritten by the Waltons? Being underwritten by the Federal Reserve, by the printing press.
Keep printing.
If you've got the big red button.
Yep, they have got the big red button.
They're putting liquidity into the market. They inject capital.
Money.
And allow the economy to kind of survive or thrive on these injections of capital and then ultimately liquidity. In this case, the Federal Reserve has $7.7 trillion of
money that they have created.
It'd be like if we were playing Monopoly and everybody on the Monopoly board ran, like everybody, we used up all the money. And then we went to a different Monopoly game and got more money.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So that we can keep going.
Right.
Right.
Suddenly those little houses, little greenhouses and the red hotels become worth more. And
So do you think they expect this to, like, they just keep printing the money and then somehow over time the economy rises up to that level and then now it all kind of balances out? Or do they think, no, we're just going to have to keep printing money to infinity? What do you think they're thinking on that?
I don't know. I think that, I mean, it's fun to criticize them and things like that. But if you have the power to do something and people are clamoring and screaming for help, 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 I'm sure it's hard not to do something. So, you know,
who wants to be the Fed chair that
the bad guy? Like, no.
That contracted the balance sheet.
Right. No, nobody wants to let the thing collapse on their watch. So I think it's kind of like a drug addict.
They've rethought how they view monetary policy and how they view capitalism in general.
Right.
Everything is somewhat in question and with really no basis. So there's really no kind of thought leader in this space. No one's come out and said, hey, this is the book on printing money to infinity. No one's come out and laid that claim.
And they don't agree on it. And then, you know, it's different points of view, you know, depending on your political and philosophical leanings. And so there is no right answer.
And it says here that Powell told lawmakers that he doesn't expect the $1.9 trillion stimulus package will lead to unwelcome increase inflation. So, really?
You print,
you just keep printing money and keep printing. You don't think that inflation is eventually going to become a factor?
Right.
I don't know. This is the Fed chairman saying that. So what's he
thinking? I always wonder what they're really thinking.
What's he thinking?
They say one thing. You know, you don't want to be the guy that pops the bubble. And so if they said what they really thought.
Yeah.
If I'm correct, and they really think something different than what they're saying, they could collapse this thing.
Powell's been saying for a while that he needs more fiscal help. So fiscal policy being government, the policies of the government, and then monetary policies being the policies of the Federal Reserve.
Right.
Both of those are kind of the economic levers that both the government and the Federal Reserve use to control the economy.
Right.
So do you think now it feels as though raising taxes would be the next step, right?
Well, and they've talked about that. Yep. You know, Biden's talking about raising taxes.
On incomes of $400,000 or more.
He's got,
so like I said, I'm glad I'm not you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of people that make less than that, so you can get the voting public to get behind that. Like, take it from them.
Yeah, yeah. The larger number can outvote them.
Now, what exactly does stability of the financial sector as the U.S. economy recovers from the pandemic, what does that look like? Because they're claiming that they see fantastic stability in the financial sector. And I'm over here looking at some of the financials and going, man, I don't know if interest rates remain low. At what point do mortgage lenders, for instance, everybody's already got a house. It feels like we're getting really close.
Well,
everybody's already refinanced.
Immigration could help some of that. True. I mean, if you're a builder and a lot more people come in, because birth rates aren't really super high, especially probably during a pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, all things being equal, when you think about population increases, and if, let's say, I have 10 people in town, okay? I have 10 people in a town of...
It's a boring town.
Yeah. 10 people in a town, and I have 12 houses, okay?
And a Dollar General.
And a Sonic.
10 people, yeah. Dollar General, a Sonic, 10
and
people.
A Taco and, Tico. So I got...
And a convenience store. Yeah, one convenience store.
So anyway, so now that we've listed all the buildings in the town.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a town of 10 people, 12 houses. Or yeah, 10 people, 12 houses. You know, prices can remain stable because... or actually would probably come down because the houses are having to compete for the people that are living there, right? So the house right. has to. So for me to sell the house, I've got to come down because there aren't enough people to fill the house. Yeah. Well, if we go to 15 people, all of a sudden now the buyers have to compete for the house. The house has the advantage, right? And we've been in this what's called a seller's market. So the homes have the advantage over the buyers for a long time, for a very long time. Eventually, that reverses. Eventually, you see an oversupply of houses. I know that in Northwest Arkansas, we're building houses at a pretty phenomenal clip, and we're a growing area. Also, the country is still growing, although the pace at which we're growing has been falling significantly for a long time, and immigration policies have a lot to do with that. We don't have the same birth rates that we've had in the past, and so if we don't in some way figure out how to create more consumers in this economy, we will struggle because it's built in. Economies have to grow. They can't just stay stagnant.
Right, right.
It never works that way. So we always have to have some form of competition in some way for capitalism to continue to work. And that's why we probably need more immigration. Now, they make very, very good cases for immigration. However, the cases that they make for immigration and immigration reform or immigration policies are always that an immigrant that comes to America with a master's or a doctorate degree generates like almost $1 million of taxes, of tax revenue for the federal government. Usually they generate as much or more, usually more than the average citizen of the United States. Now, if they have a bachelor's degree or higher, still the same, but not quite that, near $1 million. But without a bachelor's degree, we find that all of a sudden, it's the opposite, like it kind of completely reverses. And now they're not generating as much economic impact in the country as we would need for them to, you know, be an advantage of coming into the country. So there's a lot of stuff around immigration reform that is probably going to come out. And I think that's one of the key issues on Biden's agenda. But the data is clear. I mean, the data is very clear. We have to do something because we're not having enough babies. We thought COVID might fix that. So maybe what they did when they sent us all to home, hey, why don't y'all go home for a year and we're going to have
babies.
Have babies.
You're either going to get tired of each other or babies.
Yeah. And maybe that is what happened. I don't know. I don't know if birth rate's up in 2020.
I'd love to see what the birth rates are. That would be interesting.
No, I haven't heard one way or the other. I remember hearing that kind of joked about back in the early days of the pandemic, kind of like, oh, yeah, the baby boom after the big power outage in New York back in the 70s, you know, 9 months later or whatever. And so, and I don't know if that's true or if it's an urban myth.
Well, it just makes sense. You start lighting a bunch of candles and...
You know, hey, play is going to play.
Nope, this says right here, birth rate is falling during the pandemic. So
okay, well, and that's the other side of it. You know, when economic uncertainty is there and fear, birth rates fell into depression and stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're not sure that you can afford a baby, let's be careful. How about this?
U.S. births have been falling for nearly a decade, and 2019 saw the fewest births in 35 years. But the final numbers for 2020 will slip even lower, an estimated 300,000 fewer babies expected in 2021. So you're right, we're falling.
Okay.
We're falling.
This is an economic problem that we're probably not talking about enough. Is the kind of shrinking, how slowly our population is growing.
The Japanification of the American economy.
Japanification.
Japanification.
This is what's turned into Japan.
Yeah. Aging population, lots and lots more old people, not as many young people that are working to generate tax revenues to support the Social Security type, you know, pension incomes of retirees. And
Social Security is a great concept whenever the average life expectancy was 75 and there were far more people working than retired.
Sure.
But whenever that flips, and whenever we have this entrepreneurial millennial generation that is not paying nearly as much in taxes as the kind of traditional W-2 worker, now all of a sudden we have some issues.
Mm-hmm. So one thought could be, let's start raising taxes and then we can take in that tax.
Yeah, one of the things that they've talked about is raising taxes, especially and not even necessarily closing some of the tax loopholes. That's one of the things they haven't talked about, which is somewhat frustrating for me, because I think that's where you could probably generate a lot of taxes, that where people are using these tax loopholes somewhat nefariously, somewhat maliciously, right?
Carried interest for the hedge funds, things like that. That's always a popular one.
Yeah. So the one that I saw recently was, if a business owner, sanitation business, and they work in a rural area and they go basically pick up trash in a rural area, and they do hard work, and that business owner is able to make, you know, $75,000 to $100,000 a year, right? Which is a good income, but it's not, by no means is he in the top 1% or even top 10%. He's not even top 19%. That's like $145,000, I believe. And yet, if he sold his business for $1 million, he would then get hit with that very, very high tax rate. So they would essentially take nearly 50% of that in taxes, where other policies, former policies, allowed you to change that. So you actually didn't pay as much in capital gains tax as you did in income tax. There's a reason why you don't do that, because a lot of business owners, $1 million isn't near what it used to be. And a lot of business owners, anybody that thinks, man, I got a guy who made $100,000 a year, if I sell my business and I get $500,000 for it, that's good, but that's not going to take care of you. And if you're in a business where I no longer am healthy enough to do this, well, now I'm relying on the services of the federal government. I gave you $500,000, but I'm going to be a $200,000 a year burden on you. We don't really put that in, like, that's not in the equation. We're not talking about those little things. And I think there are a lot more people in that $100,000 a year salary, but I sold my business for $1 million camp, than there are in the other camp. Now, the percentage of tax revenue associated with that might be overweight to the much wealthier person, but it makes sense to me that, man, you can't negatively impact somebody that much who worked that hard and then say, hey, we're going to take half of the business that you built. We're taking half of it.
But that would still be subject to capital gains tax, though, right?
The capital gains tax is now at the highest income level. So at a certain point, your capital gains is at the 39.6% income tax, and then you also have to pay income tax. So you got state income tax, or you have state capital gains tax that you pay in addition to.
Well, even if the debate were, is it a good idea to raise taxes or not? And even if you could have that debate, if the winner of that debate is, oh yeah, it's a good idea, let's raise taxes, that's not going to be popular for very long.
No.
Like, not even a minute, right? No, that's not going to be popular. So if you're a politician and you really do think this is the right thing to do from an economic standpoint, you're in trouble if that's your program, right? I mean, you may try it, you may go after it, and you may think, well, I've got a 2-year window here to try to put this in. But usually, you know, the enactment of it is further on down the road. Well, now they're already out of office because somebody's voted them out by the time.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if that's ever a good answer. It's like, how do we increase revenue? What do we need to be doing to increase revenue? And, you know, putting the money back in the hands of the people. That's always my thinking, is that get it back in the hands of the people.
Right.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
How about reducing expenses? That would be a much better thing, but nobody seems to talk about
that's not and popular that either.
No, it's not.
Keith, what are you going to do? Find real solutions here, Keith.
I'm sorry. I'm an idiot.
Come on, Keith. What are you?
Pie in the sky freak over here.
No, that is a real one. If we could get the politicians to reduce their expenses, right? Yeah, you're exactly right.
So in steps the Fed to that giant void. You know, want to raise taxes and you don't want to cut expenses, and so you just borrow it and hope, you know, you just kick the can down the road and it becomes the Fed's job to enable the government, and so they're the great enabler of government spending. Mm-hmm. And with interest rates as low as they've been, and we haven't had horrible consumer price inflation, so people aren't really clamoring. You know, the inflation has shown up in stocks and bonds and real estate and a few things like that. It seems to be kind of rearing its ugly head now, like lumber and stuff. But for decades now, 20 or 30 years, we haven't had much consumer price inflation. And so folks have forgotten about it. And we've kind of had the quote good inflation of your, you know, your 401k assets. And whatever your asset inflation.
Of,
so
speaking of good inflation, let's talk about that. Did you guys know that? I believe this is true. Today is the anniversary of the of the bottom.
Yep. March 23rd. That's right. That's
so we are. You ready for the
first day of spring? A couple of days ago.
You ready for the returns off the bottom?
Amazing.
Here we go. S&P small cap value up 123% over the last 12 months. 123%.
That's a lot. Yeah, if I remember right.
That's a good year, right?
That's a whole lot.
I'm no mathematician.
I'm not good at math, but that's a lot.
I ain't Carl Sagan, but I believe that's a good number.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
Let's get another one in there. I mean, have you seen energy up 103% over the last 12 months? The energy sector.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they break this S&P sector performance down. On this particular sheet that we're looking at, energy including utilities. Utilities have done very well as well, as has the kind of oil and gas, you know, extractors, distributors, producers. They've done phenomenal. So everything in the market. If you're looking at your last 12-month performance, you are probably doing very well in your account right now.
Especially this week. I mean, literally.
This week.
Yeah, right.
Sorry. That was my watch.
What did it say?
Yeah,
you
so
tell that watch to shut up.
Yeah, well, so I have one of those Apple watches, which I don't know if you guys know this, but the International Data Corp Worldwide Quarterly Wearable Device Tracker has reported that wearable devices surged 27.2% year over year, 153 million units. They're saying it was COVID related, but I'm telling you, it's just the fact that more people are wearing Apple watches and Samsung watches and all that stuff than ever before, and so. You're already getting used to kind of the health benefits of wearing a device on your body.
Yeah.
So this may be specifically related to COVID. Before I got my Apple Watch, I wore like a Fitbit type deal. You know, I wore one of those for a while too.
What are you wanting to monitor? Your heart rate or
when did you get a heart?
Yeah. What are you wanting to monitor over there? Exactly.
No, when you go to the gym, you're going to need to know how many beats per minute your heart's at so you know how to regulate your workout. You didn't know about this?
Jim, what are you talking about? A gym?
Yeah, you know my friend
Jim?
Look
at Don.
Have you seen?
Does he know what a gym is?
Come on.
He hadn't been in a gym in 37 years.
No, I have been to the gym many times, but I've never had a watch that regulated my heart while I was there.
It doesn't regulate your heart.
It doesn't?
It just knows. So if you're doing something and you know, okay, I'm trying to burn fat or burn calories or burn something, right?
Yeah.
I need to do it at 140, 150, 160 beats a minute. It's more efficient in certain ranges than it is in others. And you can just monitor it.
All right, Lance Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how about that?
did you not know those?
I just run until I pass out on the side of the street and somebody pulls me in the back of their truck.
That's not the optimal way. There's more efficient ways to do it, and Apple can sell you for $900. Apple can sell you the solution, Keith.
Way to work out. No, I'm too cheap.
Steve Jobs has figured out how to get everybody addicted to their phone and addicted to their phone while at the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the one time you should leave that alone. I like to detach a little bit. I've had that chip implanted in my head instead. It's a lot easier.
That British chip.
I can shower and change accents on a moment's notice.
Hey, I will say this.
Siri started jumping on me there. So let's get back over to asset values.
What a good year. Good Lord. Golly.
I want to say this, and Keith, I want to ask you, I mean, Keith, you've been doing this longer than any of us. You know, I think you were there when they started the
Started the stock market under the buttonwood tree.
But after all those years, after all these years we've been doing this, I have never seen 12-month numbers like that. Have you?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's intense.
I'm looking at it right now, trying to remember, even off the bottom of 09. Spring of 09, I don't think it was that fast. Wow,
that, no. Man, that recovery was so sharp. And when you think, I mean, you look at 2020 numbers, like 33% in S&P 500 growth, 48% on the NASDAQ. Guys, we had a global pandemic and we shut the economy down. And those are the returns that we got. And that is almost completely attributed to this feels frothy. This feels like a lot of air has gone into the bubble and it's just air.
Right. Yeah. But again, you know, certain parts of the bubble. Doing the math, I mean, remember the Dow before the pandemic was at what, 29,600 and change? Is memory serve? Maybe. You know, so at the peak.
We just erased our board. 29.
Yeah. And then at the low, it went to what, 18.2 or so at the intraday low, I believe. Yes. And so it is up a lot from those lows. And it is up from 14 months ago, you know, roughly the peak. But again, that's a lot of that's just the math. It's how severe the downturn was that, you know, helps the calculation to the upside. But still, that's amazing. If anyone would have told any of us, I've said this a bunch, but in you know, January, early January of 2020, when everybody's doing market predictions and stuff, if someone would have said, hey, guess what's going to happen this year, 2020? You know, we're going to have a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, millions of people will get it. Lots of people will die. You know, we'll have a horrible, at least in this country, a very contentious election. They always are, but this year was especially bad. And then a president who might not step out of office, and then the numbers are going to get worse through the fall, and people are dying, and things are shutting down, and airline traffic down 90%. Oh, by the way, the market's going to be
airline traffic down about 67%.
Yeah, and by the way, the market's going to be at new all-time highs.
How would you believe that?
How would you believe that?
Yeah, you wouldn't.
We had this conversation.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot.
Keith and I, about a little over a year ago, before COVID started, we had heard about COVID. Mm-hmm. It was called coronavirus at the time.
Right.
We had heard about it in China. We did a economic forecast.
Right.
Here in our office. We had some guys in. It was whenever people could still come into the office, which we missed that. And if you listen to this podcast, but you used to come to the office to see us, we can't wait for that. We cannot wait for that day again. Yep. And we want to keep doing this podcast. We want to do it with people around. I think that'd be a lot more fun to do it with some hecklers.
It's way
more hecklers. Fun.
And you know, a lot of the guys and even gals that I talked to that were coming to that event on a regular basis, they miss it a lot, and they keep asking me, when are y'all going to start that back up?
Yeah, one of the better things that we do.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He talked about that if coronavirus becomes a thing, this could be one of those economic triggers that really sucks a lot of capital out of the market. People will go to the sidelines. Who knows what may happen in emerging markets? Who knows what may happen in some of these—
high-yield debt and—
Keith— Let me read these off for you real quick. Corporate high yields.
We were right for about 5 weeks.
Corporate high yields up 30% over the last 12 months. Emerging markets up 78% over the last 12 months.
Oh, man. We nailed the first five or 6 weeks of that, though. Our call was amazing.
Didn't we, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, we have had a larger allocation to cash, you know, last year. But we didn't just get out of the market. You know, that would have been... the wrong thing to do, and that's why you allocate and diversify.
We came back in strong off the bottom,
and we did some buying, and we bought some things on the cheap.
Okay, man, this thing's really run away from us. We owned Alaska Air there for a little while.
Crushed it, 58% in what, 3 weeks?
That's incredible. Yep. Now the thing about it is, we never anticipated. Even whenever we got that little pullback in the summer, we thought, okay, this is the reality setting in. And then we had an extremely contentious election. We had a dude with horns stand in the middle of the Senate shirtless and the market kept going.
Yep.
It just kept going. Yep. And so I do think that we are seeing that sector rotation now. Looks like we're rotating out of a lot of the growthier techie stuff into some of the more stodgy value oriented companies. People are looking at price all of a sudden, and that's a good thing.
Yep.
Find some realistic expectations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That small cap area, there's a great sign over the years of the movement when you see the small cap be the place where it all the transition begins to happen. And that's exactly what we're seeing in the small cap value, up 28% year to date.
Right.
And the small cap growth even up over 14% year to date. So yeah. those are kind of the leaders right now. And that's a great signal of the transition over the years.
Is interesting to look at these numbers. I just can't get over it.
Right. It's a mystery, S&P, right?
Mid-cap 400 value up 105%, small cap 600 growth up 108%, small cap 600 value just up 123%. That's just astounding. I think you're right, Don. I don't think I've seen anything from the bottom to, I don't want to say the top.
If you loaded up, if you were able to load up in that small cap value on March 23rd of 2020, you have done fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'm not sure if these are measured from that exact low or not. It could have been a day or two before or after. But yeah, so it could have even been better had you bought it at that point.
It looks like a 319.
But, yeah. So, okay.
So a little bit.
So yeah.
Wow. A little bit before. Now,
fantastic.
Yeah. Would you call it a mystery?
Like the magical mystery tool?
We talked about this last week. We did have to change the name of the podcast. After consulting a trademark attorney, he advised that we change the name since Mr. Market is actually a very common name and trademarked already. So the Mystery Market Tour podcast. So Mystery Market Tour, that's what we are.
Did we decide that?
I thought we did.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like we did.
Something like that.
Yeah, you want to go through some of the other ones? Finance was one of my favorite. The Bull Throttle.
Bull Throttle, that
Bull
was my
Throttle
favorite.
Was a good one. Yeah.
But I like Mystery Market. What is it? Mystery Market Tour?
Mystery Market Tour.
Sure.
It's like mystery market.
The market's a mystery. We used to be called Mr. Market. So
Mr. Market, that
almost
works.
Like a little bit of a giving the bird to the
that's
trademark.
To the man.
To
that's
the
right.
Trademark
oh, yeah.
office.
Yeah, we're not going to change it that much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Mystery Market Tour.
Mystery Market Tour. Okay.
Bull Throttle was good, though. Finance with a PHI. Kind of play on the mathematical number phi.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think it's called the golden number. Is it the golden number?
The golden number, yeah.
The golden number.
Or the golden ratio, I believe they call it. Something like that. Yeah. It's kind of based on the Fibonacci number sequence, or the Fibonacci number sequence is based on that. Something that repeats in nature. It's kind of cool.
We said,
if you're really math nerds, look it up. And of course, if you're a math nerd, you already know this, and so you don't need me to tell you.
They already know.
Right.
They know more about it than we do.
But ordinary nerds that aren't math nerds, just nerds, should look it up.
They might look it up.
If you just,
now if you like history but not math.
That's right. Look up phi, P-H-I. It's kind of cool.
And so if you are not in the Mystery Market Tour podcast group, there will be a group soon. We're going to continue to do some...
Until we change the name again.
We change the name frequently.
This is it. We're committed.
Coming
this
out
is
of the
it.
Woodwork.
Right? Yeah. Unless we find one that's better.
Yeah, you know, there could be like a Mystery Market cereal or something out there, and they're going to sue us. It's like, oh, we had invented Mystery Market cereal before you guys started using it.
But if we add the word tour, that takes a whole...
Turns out that the word the and the word podcast are not relevant in the trademark office.
Okay.
So you just learned some stuff about the trademark office.
How about the podcast?
The
podcast.
Yeah. I thought like just the podcast... And
that's an idea. The podcast.
The podcast podcast.
Like the Ohio State University who got beat in the first round.
Yes.
How about that?
Yeah.
Where's your the now?
How's your bracket doing? Yeah. How's your bracket doing? Speaking of mysteries.
Yeah, speaking of the mystery, I don't know.
What's a bigger mystery? The economy, the market, or the bracket?
Or the bracket, yeah. Well.
This year in particular.
I'm kind of loving it. Yeah, I mean, our famous Razorbacks are doing well this year, so that's awesome.
Sweet 16, bro. First since 1996.
Things are looking good for us with all these upsets. I tend to think that the upsets are not going to continue. They typically settle down. Yeah, the team that has those couple of upsets will eventually kind of come back down.
They're a bottle rocket. Yeah.
Unless you're George Mason.
Yeah. I mean, every now and then there's that
Loyola Marymount.
Yeah. Makes it all
back
the way.
In the day.
Mary of the Mount. Yeah.
I don't know. Do you see one this year?
Loyola's back in there.
Loyola Marymount is the one I was talking about.
Loyola Chicago is the one that's in there.
Yeah. Loyola Chicago's now, but there's Loyola Marymount was one where Paul.
Westfall.
Paul Westfall. Paul Westfall. Back in the 90s.
They were so fun to watch. There was no defense at all. They didn't care about defense at all. They would run down the floor as fast as they could and just throw up a shot. I mean, that, and then they'd run back down and get the ball and run back down.
That's hard to prepare for.
You'd have over a steal and a 3-on-1, you know, you got numbers, you could dunk it and then pull up and hit a three.
Oh, yeah, they'd throw it backwards and hit a three or pull up and hit a three.
They could shoot. So much fun.
They could shoot and they were fun to watch, So, but anyway, predicting.
You know, next year we need to do a bracket, a podcast bracket.
I'll do a podcast
bracket. The Mystery Market Tour podcast.
There you go.
NCAA National Championship Tournament bracket.
We'll do it.
Send cash in an envelope. And we'll get back to you.
All right, if you're a regulator listening, that was a joke. Keith was being sarcastic.
It's a complete joke.
We have already written him up. I have sent that into your office. That'll be on your desk by tomorrow morning. The last little thing that I saw that I thought was interesting that I want to bring up is the Elizabeth Holmes deal. So do you guys know who Elizabeth Holmes is?
Barely.
Theranos.
Yeah, the Theranos. So I'm reading the book Bad Blood.
Pretty girl.
She is not unattractive. I'm reading the book Bad Blood, and it's about Theranos. She's so hungry to do something right, to do something
big,
impactful, and huge,
right?
That she basically promises that they have the capability of doing something before they have the capability of doing it.
Okay.
And then they never really get the capabilities.
Mm.
And so she fools everybody in the organization, essentially. There's only just a few people that know that it's broken. She keeps everything close to the vest. She doesn't let teams work together. So nobody realizes that the thing doesn't work. And the thing is, it's a blood test machine.
Yeah, I'm reading a little bit about it now. It's just that it's a blood testing machine for
normally you would get as much blood.
Okay.
It was just a little pinprick. They'd put the blood on a little cloth, and basically they determined that you can't evaluate all of these things with that small amount of blood. And so, yeah, but she took investment. She took a ton of people's money. She actually sent the machines out, and they didn't work, and they knew they didn't work.
Enron.
Almost like if I knew the COVID test didn't work, but I sent the COVID test out anyway because everybody wants the COVID test.
Oh, yeah.
But I sent them out anyway. This is kind of what she did. And so it's hard
to say that's not fraud. It wasn't just a mistake or just being optimistic. I mean, that's like Enron setting up a fake trading desk in their Houston headquarters, you know, back in the day when analysts would come in and like, really, it's, you know, not only are you not doing as good as you say, you faked a whole room full of traders and computers and monitors and stuff. So, yeah, I mean,
I would be really good at faking the room of monitors and computers.
Well, we have that right here. We got a lot of monitors.
A lot of flashing lights going on. So, but you guys know she is pregnant now.
That's how she's trying to get out of it.
Uh-huh. Mm. Her trial is now delayed by 6 weeks.
Mm. I didn't know you could have a baby in 6 weeks. I thought it took 9 months. Well, my memory is bad.
This is Elizabeth Holmes. Yeah. She can have that machine that she made.
She
turns out
created a more efficient way.
Six week kids,
right?
Yeah,
sure. Why not? Hey, if you can invent that, you know, it's like let's get through this.
That shows up on the monitor. The last thing. Yep. Broke the computer.
Oh. Sorry,
it was snapping. Just snapping.
You're good.
I see here that it's going to be an HBO documentary, The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I mean, it's an interesting story.
I tell you,
man,
the book is fascinating. Yes. It is absolutely fascinating. How far she went to make sure nobody knew.
What was the motivation? Was it money? Was it greed? Was it just
fame?
I want to be important.
It was more about being important.
Yeah,
I think for her it was more about being relevant and important. She needed to feel relevant because she would be successful, and then she needed to feel relevant because her family, her upbringing made her feel that.
Mm.
And so
a lot of pressure to succeed. Mm.
So anyway, I tell you, it's just an interesting story to me. More from a psychological standpoint, just what's going on in her head. And you almost feel sorry for her. Like she's not because you feel sorry for somebody who defrauded people, but you almost feel sorry for her that she needed to, that's something inside of her that she needed to do.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that's sad. Yeah. It's sad that she would go that far, that if she felt that it was that big of a deal, that she would just lie and deceive.
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Not just love. I'm glad my parents didn't do that to me. It was just the opposite. You'll never amount to anything. Low expectations.
You overachiever.
Lower the expectations.
I'm joking. I had wonderful parents. I'm kidding. Yeah, I was about to say. That's not a real deal.
But you didn't feel that kind of pressure, did you?
No, you just feel loved. Yeah, I'm grateful to have felt loved by my parents. Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. No, good show. I mean, I'm excited for the Mystery Market Tour.
The Mystery Market
Tour. See where that goes.
Can we sing? One of y'all want to sing? Don, you can probably sing it, right? The Beatles.
I don't even know the song y'all are talking about. I do know.
The only song I'm thinking of is that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, but that's not the song.
Wasn't that the album that it was on?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess.
Magical Mystery Tour is...
I don't know. We've got to be really careful. I talked to the trademark attorney this week, and it's amazing how much trouble you can get in for even...
Mentioning a song?
Well, not mentioning the song, but...
I can't sing it. You don't want me to sing it anyway. That'd ruin our audience.
It would also... Yeah. If you're not in the Mr. Market podcast group, please join the group. The name will change to Mystery Market Tour, but we'll still do our happy hour and we'll still release our information right there. If you're not following Sphere Wealth Management on Facebook, please do that. And if you haven't checked out our website, spherewealth.com. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening.